Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, Dave Filoni, and Jon Favreau, and the rest of the team at Lucasfilm have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host Brian Gaughan and I are recording this week's show on Wednesday, March 6th, 2024. And we're recording on that date because, well, to be honest, Brian and I wanted to catch up on Season 3 of Star Wars The Bad Batch, which, and listeners of the show know, returned on February 21st after nearly a year. Last episode of Season 2 of Bad Batch, that one was entitled Plan 99, debuted back on March 29th, 2023. So we'll be discussing the first five episodes of Season 3, which were Confined, Paths Unknown, Shadow of Tanis, A Different Approach, and the one that debuted just today, The Return, later on in today's show. We'll also be talking about What Have We Here? Portraits of a Life. That's Billy Dee Williams' memoir that Random House published back on February 13th. Brian and I will share a few stories from the 288-page New York Times bestseller, again, later on the show. But first, the news. And as always, the news portion of today's show, Looking at Lucasfilm, is brought to you by Touring Plans. If you're headed to Orlando anytime soon and plan on checking out that tourist destination's many, many theme parks, Touring Plans can help you save time and money. So before you book that flight to Florida, please check them out at touringplans.com. Okay, Brian, so we talked on last week's show about The Mandalorian and Grogu, which is one of three feature-length releases that Lucasfilm now has in the works. Now, where this gets interesting is just a day or so ago, we learned that this Star Wars feature, again, Mandalorian and Grogu, will be the first ever to be filmed in California, and that's largely thanks to that state's film and television tax credit program. I guess the California Film Commission deemed that 15 projects that are going to be shot in that state were eligible and then able to secure an estimated $61 million in tax production credits for 2024.
Yeah, and The Mandalorian was going to get a third of that.
It was, yes, $21.8 million.
But there may be a monkey wrench in the works. Did you hear about this?
I did not. What is the issue?
What is happening is they are planning on filming it in California, but there are some parts they want to film in England, and they're bringing everybody over there. Now, it may, they don't know yet, they have to find out, it may do something to that full amount. Because they're not filming the whole movie here, they may have to give some back, or those are the rumors. At least that's a conjecture of some people are saying, since the film won't be completely shot in California.
Well, I mean, to be honest, that honestly kind of seems fair.
But if you look at some shows and some movies, they get tax write-offs in a lot of countries, like in Australia, because they do FX there. You know, CFX there, or they because I've seen a show that looked like it was filmed in, you know, one country, but then it gets all these countries tax write-offs because something was either filmed there or done there, et cetera, so there's precedence for that.
Okay, well, all right, be interesting to follow that as Mando and Grogu goes forward, and what are we hearing? A possible June start for production, is that correct?
Yeah, that they're in the pre-production right now, and they are gearing up for production in June of 2024.
Got it. Okay, well, out ahead of June, in fact, next month, Star Tours, The Adventures Continues, the brand new update of that the ride film for this attraction, featuring characters and locations from The Mandalorian, Ahsoka, and Andor, we just learned will officially begin screening at Disneyland Park in California, at Disney's Hollywood Studios in Florida, and I want to say Paris, Disneyland Paris, starting on April 5th of this year.
Now, do you know why they picked April 5th? Because weren't we talking at one time that it was going to be near May 25th or at least May the 4th?
Let me put this as politely as possible. Bob Iger has a shareholders meeting coming up.
Oh, okay.
That, you know, he needs as much good press as possible at. So I'm sure with it opening on April 5th and people rushing to the parks and standing on lines, and with the idea again that this particular ride film is going to feature the characters from The Mandalorian, Ahsoka, and Andor. In fact, the way they describe it, we will receive urgent transmissions from Ahsoka Tano, Cassian Andor, Din Djarin, and Grogu over the course of the ride.
Yeah, and quick, before you make your vote, you have to go on this ride.
Well, not exactly that, but you get the idea that Dog needs good things to happen. So okay. Now, one would hope Diego Luna, Rosario Dawson, and Pedro Pascal had a far easier time shooting their scenes for this new ride film than poor Ewan McGregor did when he was working on the Star Wars prequels. Have you seen any of the interviews he's been doing over the past week or so for A Gentleman in Moscow, the part series for Paramount?
Not The Gentleman in Moscow, but the movie that he was in with his daughter that was a month ago, and I didn't hear him mention anything about the Obi-Wan stuff.
Okay, well, there's this amazing piece of video that I would suggest folks.
I will find it.
Okay, but basically it's Ewan telling the story of shooting the final scene in Revenge of the Sith. So this is Obi-Wan delivering young Luke to Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen. And I can back Ewan McGregor up, because Nancy and I got to go to a Visual Effects Society presentation in 2002 where they showed a lot of the early, like prior to any effects work being done, footage for Attack of the Clones. And oh my God, you know, poor Ewan is in the sea of green interacting with people with paper towel tubes on their heads that have tennis balls on the top. And, you know, and that's the sight line that Ewan needs to interact with for the scenes with these ridiculously tall, thin-necked creatures. And but anyway, back to the baby Luke being delivered to Uncle Owen at Beru. And so he's supposed to be riding on a creature, but all they've given him to do, he's sitting on a green box. And so against a green background, so Ewan is rocking back and forth in it, simulating being in the saddle of some creature. And then, you know, he steps up and, you know, George that day, you know, I don't think he'd actually cast Uncle Owen at that point. So it was just Aunt Beru, the young Aunt Beru. But they left space in the scene for when, you know, the Uncle Owen would be. But now, you know, so he hands the little plastic
Photoshop
doll.
Photoshop him in.
Yep, off to the actress playing Aunt Beru. And then George says, okay, now, look at the suns. And then, you know, George looks at the lady actress who's playing Aunt Beru, and it's like, George has never told them where the suns are, you know. And so it's like, you know, so they both just said, okay, they're in that direction, and they look off. And then Obi has to ride the creature off in the distance. So Ewan gets back in his green box and starts rocking back and forth, and then heads off. And it's just the fact that he is as positive about that experience. In fact, when Brian and I were pre-gaming, you were talking about going to the Star Wars convention where he came back for the first time, right?
Wait, he came. It was last year, and when they introduced Obi-Wan, or not the show Obi-Wan, and he was talking to Jimmy Kimmel, and he's saying he wasn't involved in any of the conventions before, but he decided to go to that one because of the Obi-Wan show. So we went there, and you know, people went crazy, and they showed, I believe it was it the first two or the first three episodes?
I want to say it's the first two.
Okay. And I was there, even though I don't remember if they showed the third. And they showed it in two rooms, one with about 1,500 people, which I was in, and there was another, the big arena, which was 3,500. And it was amazing seeing it with people who were there for that reason. I sat next to a 24-year-old who came from Ohio to see it, and he was talking about the prequels like I talked about A New Hope. And I realized that, I know people were talking about it, but I realized the love for these movies was as big or bigger than all of the movies. And plus, we'll talk about it later too, when Ahmed Best came to that one too, it was like everybody got up and cheered. I mean, it was a standing ovation that lasted at least 5 minutes.
Now again, these are their Star Wars movies. So, all right. Well, now speaking of actors out making publicity, you know, Stellan Skarsgård, you know, who this past month has been out doing publicity for Dune 2. He plays Baron Harkonnen. Of course, everyone wants to know from him.
About Andor.
About Andor. All right. And so what he did is he said, look, I can't say a lot. I can say we are finishing season two now. And he suggested, given how far along they are, that I know people have been talking about, well, we won't see Andor till 2025. But he's like, you know, could be returning sooner than that. And it wow. probably not out for a half year at least. So that suggests what? Late fall or winter of 2024.
Right. November, probably. They'll do Thanksgiving. I mean, isn't that the time you want to bring it in, or November sweeps? Do they, if you're on streaming, do you still
that is
connect to the sweeps?
Very interesting question. But all right, back to Skarsgård now. Again, couldn't say anything about what was going on with his character, Luthen Rahl, but he said he has some really good stuff in season two, and you're going to enjoy seeing it. But again, if you can't wait, season one of Andor is coming out on April 30th of this year. It's going to be a three-disc pack. You can, three-disc steelbook, excuse me. And you can pre-order this early next week on March 12th. However, one thing you will not be able to pre-order is that Star Wars first-person shooter that Respawn Entertainment had in the works. Did you see this? Where Electronic Arts announced a 5% staff cut, that's approximately 670 people are going to lose their jobs.
Well, didn't Disney, did they buy EA?
I think Disney took, I want to say it's a financial move where they take a significant percentage company, but it suggested further on down the line they could take the entire company, but for now Disney's invested there. But sadly, this Star Wars game was one of the projects, because of this layoff, that was impacted and for now is canceled.
That seems weird though. You put some money into the company and then you say, well, cancel the one that has something to do with us.
If you're not a majority owner, you can't really tell the company what to do. You can be suggest,
Okay, now we're getting into conspiracies.
All right. Anyway, we touched on Star Wars Ahsoka a moment ago. Brian did some research out ahead of today's show. And so season two is now in the writing phase. Is that correct?
Yeah, they're heavily into the writing phases. They are going to start in possibly late 2024 with a production start date. And then I'm thinking, maybe they'll go right into the movie after that.
That would make sense, to be honest. Now, speaking of a season two, you also found out some news about The Acolyte. Is that correct?
Yep. The Acolyte right now is rumored to be on June 25th or June 5th, because right now they have Bad Batch on there. I think Bad Batch goes into June and they want to pick it up. So they're going to throw the Acolyte at us. And they have already geared up the writing room for season two. So I think that what they're basically want to do is what they did with Ahsoka, with the first Mandalore, is they were into season two when season one came out. So I think they want to do the same thing with this to get people excited. And they must like it because they gave it a second season, where that Ewan McGregor also talked about, he doesn't think that Obi-Wan will get a second season.
Okay. Now, The Acolyte is set in the era of the High Republic, right? 200 yes. plus years prior
to. The same as the Young Jedi Adventures.
Yes. And speaking of which, on the last show for February of 2024, looking at Lucasfilm, we mentioned the two Batuu-based episodes of the show and decided I would do my homework and hopped on Disney Plus and watched both of those. And it's a cute little show. I mean, it is very much aimed at, you know, the Disney Junior crowd. It's an aspirational show for youngsters, filled with life lessons about, you know, the two episodes there talked about connecting with your community and being okay with not being perfect, which, you know, it's not up there with May the Force Be With You, but it's still a nice message.
No, I mean, it was pretty cool, too, because it gave a little history about Black Spires. It, you know, does it, a lot of people really don't know what the Black Spires are. I mean, they're petrified wood from a forest that used to be there. And, you know, this guy, do you remember what the guy's name was, his last name?
I do not.
NIMBY.
Oh.
Not in my backyard.
Oh, my God. That's right. Wow. I missed the joke. Okay.
So I thought that was clever, but it was really nice to see. And what a brilliant idea, because these kids are going to be watching it. And now what's the first thing they want to do? They want to go see Black Spires Outpost at Disneyland.
All right. Now, speaking of animation, though, trailer for The Wild Robot.
Wow.
Dropped just yesterday thereabouts. Have you seen this yet? Or?
Yep.
Okay.
What I loved about the trailer, I haven't seen the movie, of course, but what I loved about the trailer is it was basically a silent movie. And it was basically, remember Dinosaur? Remember the first 20 minutes of Dinosaur? How you're watching that movie and you're going, this is what I want to see. And then all of a sudden everybody starts talking and you're going, this is not what I want to see.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring up Dinosaur because I bought yet another one of Bill Stout's sketchbooks. And this one I got was his one that featured the work that he did
on
Dinosaur.
Yeah.
And it really is kind of a heartbreaker to look at what they were going to do with their Moses dinosaur film, and what it eventually became. You know, that was definitely a too many cooks in the
Well, when he came in there, it was going to be all silent film. There wasn't going to be any talking or any dialogue, and you know, they fought a long time for it, but the powers that be get afraid of things like that. They don't realize that there are movies that come from, like, there's one in the today, isn't it previewing Robot Dreams or something?
Yeah, in fact, dang, that's tonight. Ugh, Drew's going to be mad I didn't get out and see it. Dang.
But anyway, that's a whole, there's no dialogue in that whole movie. So that would work too. And then also, just to throw this in, Bill Stout, it wasn't the first dinosaur project he was working on. He was actually working on a dinosaur project with Jim Henson. And they were going to do the dinosaurs in puppets. And they were in pre-production, and then Jim passed away. But then a lot of the people who were on that, especially the story and artist people, went on to the Disney one, and they tried to bring some of that into that. But again, you know, people run scared when they don't hear. It's like on radio. You can't have any dead air. You need to fill it in with something.
Interesting. Okay, well, anyway, back to Wild Robot. Absolutely spectacular trailer, folks. You got to check this out. I mean, I me personally, as soon as I saw the trailer, I actually hopped on Amazon and bought the three book set that I guess Paul Bennett, the author of the best-selling book series that Wild Robot is based on. But it's like, I wanted to know more about this project. I wanted to walk in understanding the source material. But tail end of the credits also had a nice little surprise for Star Wars fans. Mark Hamill is doing a voice in The Wild Robot. But you pointed out that fans of the Disney-produced Star Wars projects are also, you know, should seek out Wild Robot.
Yeah, Pedro Pascal's got a voice credit, and so does Lupita Luango. I hope I said that right. But yeah, that's just going to be interesting. Again, you're watching this, you're going, oh, it's a silent film, but now there's going to be voices, so we'll see what it's going to...
Well, now, speaking of Mark Hamill, though, I have been really enjoying reading What Have We Here? Portraits of a Life. This is Billy Dee Williams' memoir. And one of the funnier stories in this is they're at the royal premiere of Empire Strikes Back, and they are in the receiving line, and the queen is making her way down and chatting with the director and the actors, and Billy Dee is standing next to Mark Hamill and leans into him and says, well, you know that you can't make direct eye contact with the queen. They'll arrest you. You know, be sure to avert your eyes. And Mark is... That's not true, right? You know, but I think the thing I enjoyed the most about this book is that, you know, first of all, Williams is was a working actor when he got tapped. Word got back to him that, George Lucas would like to talk with you about the next Star Wars film. And this was after he and his son had gone numerous times to see A New Hope in theaters. And as William tells the story, it's like they got as far as saying George Lucas wants, and he says, I'm in. You know, I don't care. Now, mind you, Billy Dee, one of the reasons that Lucas reached out was that, there had been some criticism of of A New Hope, that, that it was a trifle monochromatic. The only black character was Darth Vader, and so it was the notion of, okay, we maybe need to address this issue. And what's interesting about Williams talking about Lando Calrissian is like, look, I didn't see this guy as a color. If anything, he says Calrissian, that's Armenian, that name.
Yeah, right.
He loved sci-fi his entire life, and so it was like, I get to be in a sci-fi movie. I get to be in a, and so, yes, but he talked about what was interesting about coming into the sequel as a new character. Ford, Fisher, and Hamill were already a tight little family. And he was the newcomer, so to speak. And not only that, face it, Lando, you don't know quite who Lando is for much of Empire, particularly given what seems to happen to the effect of him handing off, setting up Han so he can be taken by the bounty hunters. He talked about how he would go to his kids' school and kids would come up to him on the playground and, you're a bad man. You said, no, wait, kid. Yeah, wait for the sequel. Speaking of which, Return of the Jedi, he talked about how when they were shooting the Sarlacc pit scenes for Jedi, that he brought his son with him. And, first of all, his son was confused because it's like, put on this T-shirt. It's like, why does this say Blue Harvest? It's like, we can't tell anybody we're shooting Star Wars. So, that this is the fake horror movie name, but it came time to shoot the scene where, Lando is dangling over the Sarlacc pit. And evidently the stuntman didn't show up or something to the effect. So that's Billy Dee's son dangling there over the pit.
Oh, wow.
It's just like, and he was thrilled for the opportunity to do it and that sort of thing. But look, there's a lot of other great films that Billy Dee Williams was involved in. Brian's Song, Lady Sing the Blues, the one he shot with Sylvester Stallone about the terrorists in New York with Rutger Hauer. But again, this he's a working actor who is a great storyteller. And he, by the way, he also has wonderful stories about J.J. Abrams reaching out out ahead of making Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, just to the effect of, and just the way he got him to come on the movie is like, well, it's time, don't you think? And yeah, Billy right. D, absolutely. So, no, I cannot recommend highly enough that chase this one down. It's a fun read. You learn quite a bit about the Star Wars films, and again, you know, what it was like to shoot prior to green screen. But anyway, we've got another book to talk about on the second half of today's show, and as we mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to talk about Star Wars Bad Batch, the episodes so far for season 3, and Brian has a lengthy look at the redemption of Jar Jar Binks, is that correct?
Yep. Okay. The redemption of Jar Jar Binks.
Okay, we'll get to that in just a moment, folks, but first, this. Before we get started here, I did want to mention another book I have been enjoying, and that is Star Wars, 100 Objects, Illuminating Items from a Galaxy Far, Far Away. And this is written by Christine Braver. But when I say written, it's sort of the text that accompanies some wonderful illustrations of things like, for example, item number 63 is an X-Wing's pilot helmet. Or number 59 is Max Rebo's Red Ball Jet Organ. what it is this lovely sort of walk through the world of Star Wars. Like for example, item number 55 is not a thermal detonator, it is the thermal detonator, the one that was used by Borsch, the bounty hunter that Princess Leia pretended to be to infiltrate Jabba's palace. And I they go all the way from the, you know, the prequels. For example, we have the Kamino saber dart. And then, you know, if we jump to the very, very end of the book here, let's see, we have, oh dear, we have C-3PO's red arm.
His red arm? Not red, oh no, he had a golden, he had a silver one. Oh, was that when he was torn apart on, the Cloud City, and then they put them back together?
I would have to say yes, but okay. But anyway, if you know, it's an interesting walk down memory lane, I guess is the polite way to put it. So you know, that was released in November of last year by the nice folks at Discovery, and so yes, you know, if you. If you enjoy, I mean, in a weird sort of way, it's like looking at the Van Eaton's catalog, but you don't have to look at it and then say, I can't afford that, you know. So, all right. Anyway, but speaking of things you can afford, we mentioned at the top of the show that Star Wars Andor, the complete first season, is going to be available for pre-order starting on March 12th. We neglected to mention, in fact, you were talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi, which, by the way, given the title of this, you're not wrong about there's not going to be a second season because it's called The Complete Series, yes.
Remember in an interview during Killers of the Flower Moon, Scorsese came out and said, we need to focus on the media. People want, they don't want just streaming, they want to own the movie. And now I think people are listening to them.
It's one thing for you to say that. It's another thing to remember that, what, a week, 10 days ago, Disney announced that they were effectively handing off their entire home entertainment to Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Mind you, Disney will control the digital rights to, you know, all of its titles. But going forward, it's Sony that's going to make the physical discs, the Blu-rays and the DVDs.
But these steel boxes that are coming out, is that still from Disney or is that going to be from Sony?
Again, the deal got announced 10 days ago. You know, I mean, you know, everything that was already in the pipeline from Disney is coming. And as Brian just pointed out, these items include Moon Knight, the complete first season, and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the complete first season. And all of the titles we've just mentioned, pre-order March 12th, and will be available for purchase April 30th. In 4K Ultra HD as well as Blu-ray. So, anyway, speaking of 2024, Brian, you also had some information about New Jedi Order.
Yeah, that's the title that they're. I had heard Rey's New Jedi Order or just New Jedi Order, but this is their Blue Harvest, I guess, and they're heavily into pre-production, which means they have to start shooting in either late 2024 or early 2025. They've already announced that they're looking for casting, or they've announced some casting details. There are three, right now, there are three leads they want to cast. Two will be Rey's apprentices, and one will be the villain. And then there's also a rumor that Angela Bassett is in talks to be in a Star Wars project. They're not saying what Star Wars project, but since this is on the front burner, people are conjecturing it may be this one.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I mean,
and also, it's not going to be a beginning of a new trilogy. It's going to be a sequel to the first three, or the prequels, or sequels. So it'll be a sequel to the sequel, not a new trilogy.
You'll face it, we're all still trying to find what, you know, how to describe the last three films. What I always hear is the Disney-produced sequels. So, but yeah, well, what's kind of interesting, if you think about it, this time last year, Angela Bassett was considered a very strong candidate for the Best Supporting Actress Oscar, which ultimately went to Jamie Lee Curtis, who, by the way, did you see that evidently there's a Freaky Friday follow-up that she's looking to do with, I'm blanking her name. Oh, Lindsay Lohan.
Really?
Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. I will watch that. I mean, Lindsay Lohan is making a comeback now on Netflix. She has her second film out, and it looks pretty good. I think I've always thought that Lindsay Lohan was one of the greatest child actors ever. I mean, the Freaky Friday, the Parent Trap. She was amazing. Even Herbie, the Herbie movie. So I was always hoping that she would come back, and this looks like a good thing and this is a Disney produced?
That is my understanding. I don't know if it's Disney produced for Disney Plus or theatrical. Okay. I mean, face it, this is an interesting moment at Disney, given that Sean Bailey, the head of studio, was forced out last week. So it's one of those moments where it's like, okay, everything that Sean had in the works, does that go forward? And, you know,
I hate when that happens.
It's Hollywood. You know, you kill your darlings. And what's kind of interesting is just in the past day or so, Bob Iger talked about, I want to say it at that Goldman Sachs conference, about how, you know, we quietly killed a couple of projects. You guys just didn't notice. So it's like, all right, got to find out what Bob killed. All right. Anyway, you had mentioned, I want to say that Brian's been talking about this for a while now, the redemption of Jar Jar Binks. And first of all, this was on our radar because of a Looking at Lucasfilm listener. Was that right?
Yeah, we were talking about Jar Jar Binks, and we could not understand the hatred, but we also really like the idea that not only is there the hatred has diminished for Jar Jar, but that Amon Bess was brought back as, actually he played the character of Jedi in the second movie, but then they brought him into the Mandalorian as the Jedi who rescued Grogu. So that was really cool. So a listener, Alyssa McCallan, she wrote a comment on the Patreon, which is the best way to get a hold of us. And she suggested that we should listen to a podcast called The Redemption of Jar Jar Binks. Now, this was done for the TED Podcast Neighborhood Network. You know, TED, what is it? Technology, Entertainment, Design. Is that what they stand for? Anyway, it basically breaks down the mystery of our favorite love to hate amphibian. And it was done by Dylan Marin, who has a podcast called Why Do People Hate Me? And that was an interesting podcast. What he does is he calls people who basically troll him on internet and he asks them why they do that. So he was the perfect person to talk about this. Now, we all have a weird relationship with Jar Jar Binks, but especially as old guys, especially when, I've been a fan. I saw the first movie when I was 16, and now I'm 39 in this movie. No, I'm not 39 now, but I'm 39 when the movie comes out. And I see it with two friends of mine. One's in his mid-20s and one's in his teens. He's like 18. And I see it with my friends, and I'm loving it because the technology is there and I've never seen anything like it. They hate Jar Jar because they thought it was too goofy. They didn't like the voice. We weren't talking about racism this time. We're just talking about how we didn't feel it was fit in the movie. Now, at this time, I started dating this young lady, Liana, who would be my wife, and I brought her to this movie. Now, she was from Armenia, and she had never, ever seen a Star Wars movie. She didn't know what Star Wars was. When she saw my collection, which she still married me after seeing my collection, she just thought they were toys. She didn't know what they were. So I took her to this movie. She came out of the movie really enjoying it because, you know, from another world and all that stuff. But she said, the person I like the most is Jar Jar. And I was like, am I sure I want to marry this person? But I just didn't realize, how could anybody like Jar Jar? Then I realized, I said, well, but why? Because he was funny, because he was goofy, and because he saved the day. And I'm going, oh my gosh, this is something that nobody really saw. They just saw this character that they didn't think fit in the movie. But when you sit down and think about it, he is the only comic relief in the whole movie. The movie's very, very, very dark. I mean, if you think about it, it's like, you know, okay, you have a queen. Her whole planet is being blockaded by the Trade Federation. She is part of a race on Naboo, but she doesn't pay any attention to the race underwater. So, you know, that's a little dark right there. They escape, they land on a desert planet, and they're taken in by a woman and a little boy who are slaves, who are owned by another person. Dark. They buy him back, but they can't buy the mother. Really dark. Then one of our main characters gets killed, and then we end the movie on a funeral. Throughout the movie, it's a very tense, dark movie, dark for kids, but you've got this one character who, if you didn't have him, you would just walk out of that movie ready to just walk into the distance. But your hate for him brings you back to reality. And then what people don't really, they go, oh, I didn't like Jar Jar. Well, why didn't you like Jar Jar? Well, because he was too goofy. Do you know that that character was all generated by a computer? And then they go, no, it's a guy in a suit. No, it's not. It's a guy generated by computer. And then we find out later when you listen to the podcast, they talk to Ahmed Best a lot. And ILM were the first people who came up with motion capture. Nobody had it before. The original thing was he was supposed to dress into the suit. They had him in a suit. And then he had the mask on top of his head so everybody would look at it. Because he is 6'2", but the character was, 6'5". And then they were just going to animate the head. But they looked at it. It didn't work. So they came up with this idea. They put him in a black leotard and put reflective squares over his body to basically give them a grid. And then, I mean, we know this now. We've seen the people with the ping pong balls and stuff like that. And now they don't even need to use motion capture suits. They can just use regular filming. But it's the first time anybody did that. And then they would record the way he would walk. And he came up with the idea. He came up with a way to walk because Ahmed was originally, they saw him in the stage place of Stomp. And he could sing, he could dance, he had great movement, he was in his mid-20s, that's what they wanted. And then he had this cute little voice he did for his cousins. He gave it to, he told George about it, and George goes, great, let's go with that. So, you know, nobody, it was very organic. It wasn't like, oh, we have to do this. It came about organic. And here he was, a 20-year-old, on a film with Liam Neeson being directed by George Lucas. So he was a little weird about, and he would show it. He would seem nervous, and Liam came up to him and goes, well, what's wrong? And he told him, I don't feel comfortable sometimes, and I have ideas, and I don't know if I could tell anybody. He goes, well, what's your idea? He goes, well, the part where we're walking this way, what if I, try to get out of the way and I end up going off screen? And Liam says, what a great idea. Let's talk to George. So he goes over to George. He brings Ahmed with him. He goes, George, Ahmed has something to say to you. You know, Ahmed is like, and he gets it out and he tells George. George looks at him and he says, great, let's do it. They did it in the next shot. It works out perfect. It's in the movie. So it's just things like that. You know, that the podcast, because they talk to Ahmed a lot. Because if you think about it, that's Jar Jar. That's the person who gave us Jar Jar. And he wasn't giving us anybody to offend us. He was giving us somebody to love. And through Liana's eyes, when she came out of the movie and said, this is my favorite character, and now I went out and bought all Jar Jar toys for her. What a way to start a marriage. I saw it through her eyes and realized, okay, I'm wrong. Jar Jar is a very good character. And then, of course, when I brought my kids to see it, when they brought them back in the theater in 3D, and they had seen it on video. Devin seen it on video. Brianna did not. And they were, I think Devin was 8, Brianna was 5. And when they saw it, again, Jar Jar is their favorite character. And they're laughing. And they like the little kid. And then, you know, that's what, and then I realized, okay, this movie is made for them. Now, even the third movie, just to throw this in, Devin wanted to see the third movie. So We went to the theater and we saw, I think it was Corpse Bride, and then he said, can we see Star Wars? So I said, sure. So I brought him to see Star Wars, and we came in about a half an hour into it. So he sat there for an hour, but then it was getting into the tense parts, and he says to me, he goes, we can go now. And then he gets home and he tells his mother, she goes, well, how are the movies? And she goes, well, we saw Star Wars. It was so scary, you couldn't even watch it. It was so scary. And he was 8 years old when he saw this. So the third one, you know, the third one gets darker and darker. But the first one, you know, there was a lot of kid element into it. But then if you look at the other ones, I think what Lucas did is, if the kid is 8 years old when he's seeing this film, he's going to be 11 years old when he sees this, so I can bring up the drama, and he's going to be 13, 14 when he sees this, so now I can really throw it at him. But it's very good, it's only 6 episodes, and they're all about between a half an hour and 45 minutes, and they really did... It's really well done, and it's, you know, because it's for the TED Network, of course. So, and it will change your idea of Jar Jar, no matter what you think about it. Now, he even says, I still don't like Jar Jar, but I understand Jar Jar.
Okay, and again, written and narrated by Darren Maron,
and it's called The Redemption of Jar Jar Binks.
Terrific, okay. All right, I'm going to be spending a lot of time in the car over the next weekend or so. I'll check this out. Okay, and now finally, where we started today with season 3 of Bad Batch. And like mentioned, we deliberately delayed the recording of the show so we could be right up to date. So episode 5 dropped just today. You know, so can we talk a little bit about the overall arc here for season 3? Because, when coming out of season 2, first of all, Tech's dead, right? Maybe?
Yeah, we haven't seen him yet, but he is dead. Well, he's not in the first 5 episodes, which is an arc. It's the escape arc. So, Devin, I watched them all with Devin, and he brought this up. Did you realize or read it anywhere that the Bad Bunch is basically the A-Team?
I did not. That's...
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we went through who would be who. And I don't think there's a Mad Murdock, because Wrecker would be, you know, what's his name, Mr. T. But there is a Face, there is a... you know, a weapons guy. So, I mean, it really, you know, it kind of follows, you know, and for that matter, they could have gone on forever. But for the most part, this is the last season. And I feel that it's going to get into setting up, or what has already been set up, his universe, David Filoni's universe. And he's just filling in the blanks and putting it and making it all... like, you know, maybe he's retconning stuff, but still, he's making it so people are going, they would go, oh, okay, I know now why this happened. But the first 5 episodes are basically Omega and Crosshair's escape from the prison they're in, and Wrecker and Hunter are looking for them. And then they finally make it. They finally get to them, and then the last episode is basically they're back on the island, but it's, I think, what would it be? It's basically getting ready for the next arc. Now, how many, are there going to be 16 episodes?
I want to say yes.
Okay. Then I think they're going to go in arcs of like 5, and then maybe more the next arc. But the first arc, and it's really good too. And you see, wow, what they've done with Omega. She's got longer hair now, and she puts it in a ponytail, which, okay, maybe that doesn't matter anything, but it shows that she's growing up. And she is taking control. I know Hunter's the leader, but in a way, she's the leader, because they all follow her, especially now Crosshairs. Crosshairs has a type of connection and a love for her that he doesn't think he has to protect her, but he uses her as lithium. Basically, when she's around, he's a better person, and he knows it. And she does, and she, I don't know if she knows that these, she even calls him, she goes, I'm older than you are, you're my little brother. And then you realize, okay, she's got this And then one thing they find out is she's high in what they're calling M counts.
Midichlorians, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, does it midichlorian mean you have the Force? Or does she just have a high rate of... Because what we were told, midichlorians are in everybody, but some people have it more than others, and you have to train them. But so is she going to come up... Is she Force sensitive? Because I've never seen her use the Force in any way.
I have to admit, one of the things I'm enjoying about the Bad Batch Season 3 is... I think I know where I'm going, but I'm not entirely sure.
Oh, cool.
You know, I mean...
Because I don't.
Okay.
I know they're connecting her somehow to the Necromancer Project.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But we also know that... who's that one character? The Jedi, she was a Sith. And she's going to be in it. So we'll see if... You know, there's going to be more. I mean, something's going to happen to where, you know, that one person, the one who owns the bar or whatever, is going to ask them to do something. And then something's going to happen to put everybody in danger.
I can't help but wonder. I mean, again, remember, this is Dave Filoni, and Dave is a loyal, you know, Lucasfilm employee, you know, trained at George Lucas's knee, and a storyteller who really likes to provide the story glue, and so to speak. And I can't help but wonder if Dave is trying to do the Hail Mary here to sort of redeem the story that got told in Rise of Skywalker in regard to the Emperor.
I think you're right. And hopefully he does a good job of it. And they somehow, but it's got to be somehow incorporated into his movie. And even the Rey movie too. Because, you know, of course, the Rey movie connects to, you know, the Rise of Skywalker. So, but I can't say anything but it. When you watch it, the dialogue is great. It's the best characters in any, I mean, you just love all the characters. And I know I've said this before, but Omega to me is a character who goes against the grain of every kind of character in her position. And she just, it's neat to see them as a family. Oh no, and Echo comes back. I hope I'm not giving away too many spoilers, but Echo comes back and you just, and that's when you miss Tech the most, and you do get emotional because they're all connected, and they're missing they have a hand with five fingers and they're missing a finger.
As you mentioned, we've completed one arc here. We still have a good chunk of story to run, but you're not wrong. It's been highly enjoyable. It's well written. I love how it's respectful of its own story. I mean, for example, the base that they went back to get a place where they could read the
pen. Oh yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, this was the setting, the place where the big cross-eyed story.
Right, the big reveal, and how he his crossroads, so to speak. Yeah, and he's the one. He needed to go back there. Even Hunter says, why are we here? And that was interesting, too. But there were some really great little scenes in it that the dog or, you know, the monster, how he helped. Yeah. Batch, how he helped, you know, dig out the things. And it just all these just little subtle things in it that really work to the point that you want to be part of it. I mean, it's you when you're done watching it, even though all of them kind of end on a question mark, you still come away, you know, able to breathe again.
And speaking of coming to an end, we're now at the end of this week's episode, folks. And Brian and I will be back in 2 weeks' time.
Should we sing a song?
Well, no, but I by the way, again, I've been making efforts to get caught up Star Wars-wise, and I've also been making efforts to catch up Indiana Jones-wise, and I'm pleased to report I'm finally viewing Dial of Destiny. And
we'll get to talk about it in the next 2 weeks?
Yes, we'll get to talk about it in the next 2 weeks.
Okay, cool.
So, all right. So anyway, in the meantime, till then, Brian, where can the nice folks find you?
A lot of people have been finding me on Instagram at btgaughan, G-A-U-G-H-A-N. And it's always great to see, because I know when I get a new person that they're there for Star Wars. So it's always cool to know that, you know, people like what we're doing. And so, yeah, that's where you can find me. And where can we find you,
Jim? Well, I'm on X, Twitter, whatever you call it. Likewise, Instagram as Jim Hill Media, and over on Facebook as Jim Hill Media News. I want to let you or remind you that we have some other shows here we'd love you folks to sample. We have, of course, The Mothership, Disney Dish with Len Testa. Likewise, we have Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, which is animation news and commentary. And I want to remind you that Drew has his own wonderful podcast that he does with Charles Hood, the Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. We've revived our Universal show, which is now called the Epic Universal Podcast, with Eric Hersey, and getting a nice response. And we've also got our merch show up out of the ground again. That's with Lauren Hersey. And in fact, what's kind of interesting is you can go look at that one on YouTube.
Yeah, on YouTube. That's great to see you guys.
Yeah, I have a face for radio. There's just no other way around
it. No. Okay. Look, it's like Abbott and Costello, right?
Well, yeah, it's a joke I always loved. Jim is doing the work of two men, and they are Laurel and Hardy. Okay. Now, I also want to remind you about Disney Unpacked, Len and Mai's first ever video series, speaking of stuff on YouTube and the like. We're doing this with Jim Shull, who spent 30-plus years working at Walt Disney Imagineering, creating some of your favorite attractions. In fact, this month, March, we've been talking about Jim's work on Rock and Roller Coaster. And next month, we're going to be taking a close look at the history of all of the variations on Buzz Lightyear, Space Ranger, Spin. So we're back in Star Wars territory again.
So do you have to be a Patreon member to see those?
I believe so, but to be honest, it's pushing stuff off to YouTube as well to make folks aware of what we're up to at Patreon. So, anyway, I guess that's going to do it for this week, folks. Want to thank you again for listening. And like I said, Brian and I will be back in 2 weeks' time. So till then, take care.